Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and unaffiliated to Bending the Elements and Avatar Podcasts with your hosts, the Novice Elitist, Isaac and Caleb. Caleb, how are you doing at the moment?
Oh, I'm doing good. I was trying to think of a joke that I could make related to the title Masks, but couldn't think of any. So I'm just here.
Mumbles something in an unintelligible language. Mask of Phantasms. No, wait.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, no, that somehow works, I guess. But masks, here we go. We're on to episode 6. I can't believe it. And as we mentioned in that first episode, this is the one that Brian Knitsko and Michael Dante DiMartino got writing credits on, which, by the way, they share those writing credits with three other people: Emily Kim, Hunter Reese, and Yuba Muhammad. I don't know if I said that last name correct. Sorry if I missaid your name. So a lot of people working on this one. And then it was directed by Roseanne Liang, who is the same director as the one from Spirited Away. So
returning.
Not Hayao Miyazaki, but yeah.
He's busy making The Boy and the Heron.
There you go. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of people behind this one. And yeah, I guess we'll see if it was all worth the effort. If they, you know, because I'm pretty sure every other one of these we've covered has only had one writer. So it's kind of surprising to see this many people on this one.
Caleb, if you had to flip your signboard around, what would you have it say?
Well, yeah, I guess I'll get out of the way. My sign is a flaming green, or I guess you can't say that's for flaming red. What's shining green? It's Emerald City. If my meter has been in the middle this whole time, just kind of, it bounces a little bit, but every time it comes back to the middle, sometimes negative, sometimes positive. This one shoots to the other end, and I think this is by far easily the best episode of this season. And I don't know if it's going to carry on to the next two, this wave of positivity that I felt after rewatching this for the second time, but oh man, do I think that they did a lot of things right here. If I was to pick my best thing, I think the best moment, or the thing that really I thought was just firing on all cylinders, was the scene between Aang and Zuko after they escaped, and they're in that little, I don't know, little like basement or whatever that is, little shack. The interactions between the two of them there, the bonding, and then the way that they ended it with Zuko's rage, I thought was just so well done. I'll even tag on a second best thing. I think the Agni Kai duel, I added onto that, built into that scene so well, that I was like, oh wow, where was this writing for the rest of this season? Because this is some just great stuff. Worst thing, I don't think I have a worst thing. Even the special effects in this episode, I feel, were a touch above everything we've seen previously. And yeah, no, overall, I'm fairly glowing for masks. But how about you, sir? What best thing, worst thing, and what are you thinking about this one?
Well, so if I had to, like, you know, flip the sign, or if I had to flip my board, I'd be saying, after This episode made me feel like after 5 episodes of the gas meter or the RPMs being at a low, like, oh, I think my transmission's about to go out or something like that, or I'm going to get an engine block swap or something like that. This one finally shoots to the proper, like, 2x1000 RPM, and surprises me how much changes and adaptational changes can make, especially even by the creators of the show or whoever it was that came up with this, can make a difference. I'm flipping my sign, feeling it. I was impressed with this episode.
Yeah, and it was, again, I feel like quite a touch above the things we've seen previously in this season. I kind of wonder, like, why did everything come together so much better here than what we had previously? And that's not to say everything that we've had previously was bad. It just always felt like the mix wasn't quite right. But I, yeah, I guess we'll go through the details and explain why we thought this one worked better. But yeah, I wish that we would have gotten more of this season. And no spoilers. I mean, I will admit that I did watch the following two episodes. I won't say what I was thinking about them, but yeah, no, this definitely still feels like a touch above everything else. I guess that's mild spoilers, but
of course. Wow, when we get closer to the end, it almost seems as though the writing, or at least the drama, gets better.
Oh, but yeah, I guess we should jump into this episode and yeah, go through some of these details that I think were really working. And I don't know, I guess I don't want to do scene by scene stuff, but I think the opening scene with Iroh and Zuko, just with Zuko preparing to join his father at the war meeting, and he seems all excited but kind of nervous at the same time. And I love the way that Iroh as the mentor figure comes in, and in a way you can tell that he is acting like a more real father than Zuko's own father. And I really like the way that those two sell that scene.
I never did say my best thing or worst thing.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's perfectly fine. My best thing is June, once again, and her interaction with Aang. And my worst thing is Iroh's speeches at the beginning and the end. I think they are kind of out of place, especially at the very end, where if you had removed it, I think it would have made the ending much more better and visually like way more hard hitting. So that's my worst thing.
Now that is very fair. Yeah, this is I never quite get this when shows do this, because I always wonder who's he talking to. Like, are we supposed to believe that this is the character and this is just like his internal thoughts? Or are we supposed to think that this is the actor spelling out the theme for us? I'm never quite sure what to think with that. And so it just bothers me.
And is it potentially like him writing a letter? Is it him writing a letter to Lu Tien, his son, while he's in the siege of Ba Sing Se? I don't know. That'd be cool if that is, but... Again, yeah, what are they? Because usually pardon me for going here, but I have come across many superhero films where we always get like, you know, the hero monologuing at the end. And hey, both of us are big fans of inner monologue, at least. But this is when inner monologue, excuse me, isn't not spoken of, but if it's not introduced in a show, it can feel a bit jarring. And when you're trying to sound like very deep and like you're like making a difference with like these beginning and middle, or sorry, the beginning and the end with him making quotes, I'm just like, I'm not really feeling this.
Yeah, that's where the internal logic element comes in. Like when it's a movie and we open up and then maybe we get some voiceover throughout and then a bookend kind of thing, it's told from this perspective. But when you have an ongoing TV show and then you just throw it in there for one episode, it's like the perspective it doesn't really work. And so that makes it weird. But I come across this constantly in new Doctor Who. And me and Eric talk about this, and Eric's just kind of like, I don't see why this bothers you. It's just, that's just the conceit for the episode. You just kind of, that's just a stylistic choice. But no, for me, I do fixate on like, well, you can't just introduce that partway through. It doesn't make sense if you do it this way. But maybe that's nitpicking.
I will say this. When they, for instance, the series Arrow, early, like the first two or three episodes do have like a voiceover where like the main character is kind of like monologuing stuff. I think in the beginning and middle or end. And then like after episode three or four, he stops doing that. I guess they realize, okay, we don't need this character doing it anymore. Maybe the test screenings or with the feedback from the audience was like, even though they already filmed the show beforehand, the audience is not feeling it. So it's like, we'll drop it. And they did from there on out, I believe.
Hey, maybe they brought it back for the last episode.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe they changed, but I'm just only referring to when like they started with it to see if it would work. And I guess maybe... I mean, I noticed it when I stopped, but this is different where like they tried it at first, didn't work. Maybe this one, they didn't have like any of that. They had that exposition in the very beginning of the pilot, but in this one, it just comes out of nowhere. And I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
And no, I don't, because again, I think with the visuals that we get in the actual episode itself by the end, oh my goodness, like just without any of the dialogue, I would have been satisfied. And if not been like, oh, this is a moving scene where All it is just visual storytelling and letting the characters act and hopefully having no music played. I also want to give like a big shout out to certain scenes didn't have music in them, and then they did bring music in there. I was like, I didn't really need that, but whatever. let's proceed.
Yeah, so we get that nice opening scene between Iroh and Zuko. And I like the way that they quickly contrast that. It's like this young, excited Zuko, excited to see like who he's gonna, how he's gonna fill out his role as the prince, and then what he's become after the fact. And he's just, he's getting dressed down by Zhao, who got promoted to an admiral, and then his own men are betraying him. And I like the contrast there between those two bits. And I even felt bad for his poor men, because like they've all dealt with Zuko's bad side. He's been treating them like doormats, but even they seem to feel bad about betraying him. Like they feel hurt, and they feel like, oh, he's always disrespected us. Like, we shouldn't feel bad about this. But you can just tell in the way that G delivers his, delivers to Zuko that he can't disobey the orders. You can tell that he's feeling sore about it.
At the same time, I understand his frustrations given the amount of Zuko being a nuisance and being very demanding and being a bit short-tempered. I can understand where this insubordination, as Zuko implied, came from. So why G kind of like went against him. So I don't like blame him fully, because it's like he's kind of a, because we didn't see from his perspective, he's very much a hothead. So I understand why he would, you know, be like, all right, like this guy needs to have some comeuppance.
Yeah, I think they've done a solid job throughout the season building up that this G, Lieutenant G, is the one to, I guess he's the what's it called, the Greek choir for the guards or the men serving on the ship. And so yeah, he's the only perspective we get of it. And but you can see all the other faces too. They feel guilty about the fact that they have to shift loyalties, even though Zuko has been a jerk to them. And I liked Iroh's speech as he's trying to convince the men that, hey, Zuko deserves your loyalty. Like, you don't understand the things that he's given up. And you can see again that G is just kind of, he feels conflicted. I thought the actor did a really good job portraying that, that internal conflict during that scene.
I agree. To break the flow of this, the continuity here, because I don't want this to be in,
sure,
plot point by plot point. I mean, we'll obviously address plot points, but it's like, I don't want to go in sequential order to break it up, just because I need to remember this. I know you have notes, but I need to at least bring up when Zhao's in prison. At the prison, excuse me, we have Zhao. He's, you know, being boastful. He's being completely over the top and an egotistical maniac. And he, you know, he's having his second in command or whatever to take the minutes and write the letter addressing to the Fire Lord. And he mentions something about the sages having a plan. So I don't know what that is entailing. I just know that, like, that was a line drop. So I'm going to forget it later on. But I'm just going to say here, like, the sages apparently have a plan.
Yeah, I like that little inclusion, too. I didn't notice that the first time around. But yeah, I was glad to see that. Oh, and I just enjoy Ken Lung's, his smugness and his ego just ballooning during that scene. I thought he was having a lot of fun with it, and I was having fun with it too.
I will say his delivery with the "we will celebrate." I was like,
No.
I like how he built up to, you know, becoming like super smug and super egotistical, but when he said "celebrate," I was like, "You can." It's fine. It's just the delivery. I was like, no. I wish he just yelled and burst it out.
Yeah, I'll say I like the scene with Aang. Yeah, when it comes to the speech, that was one of the moments where, the crowd looked like extras in their costumes, and they were like raising their arms like, yeah, we're happy. And I was like, oh yeah, they all look so pleased to be there. I don't know, it just had a really fake quality. And we'll get another one of those later on in the last episode, very similar moment with similar issues
in comparison to the original. Not to again be unfair to this, it's just the way they went with it to what they were referencing. And again, nothing on Ken Lung for choosing going a different direction, because this is a fascinating approach to this character of starting from nothing and basically getting everything he wants within like the past few weeks or whatever. And all of a sudden he's probably going like mad with power. That's perfect, obviously. So the celebrate, it's probably nothing, but it's just like the way his delivery, it's like he's almost like not ready for this. It makes sense. It's like any stick any like, you know, random person with power or like, you know, importance, and are they going to fold with that power, or are they going to like be obsessed over it and be like absorbed by it? Who knows? And I guess in this case, Zhao is being absorbed and like consumed by it.
Yeah, I did like after the speech, we just kind of linger on his face and you can see how much he's soaking in the praise. Like he loves being the one that gave that command to everyone and everyone's cheering for him. So I thought that part was good. But yeah, the speech itself and the guards' reactions, I thought were just, it didn't quite work as well. But I did like some of the context or the subject of the speech with them talking about how they're going to prove that fire is a superior element. I was like, okay, we're getting some of the ideology that's driven into these folks that, they're the ones that deserve to be on top because their element's the best. I didn't mind that inclusion.
I agree. Not only that, but we had with the great sages, where was it? Where they, they turn against Aang, obviously. And they say like, we're all supposed to like be at peace. Like I'm the Avatar, whatever it was. And, I'm supposed to bring peace to the nations. And it's like only the great sage or the sages, only the Fire Lord can bring peace to the nations. I like that line.
Yeah, I thought that was good too. Yeah, I guess we could jump over to Aang for a little bit.
But halfway through the episode is Zhao having his best day ever. Because he gets to stick it in Zuko's face twice with taking over his ship and then just immediately like taking over or taking having Aang be taken over to him, excuse me. So it's like he just wants to get in his face and be like, suck it, buddy.
Yeah, no, I like that moment too. And poor Aang's face, he's just kind of sitting there like stuck in this situation between this power play. Felt pretty bad for him.
He's like, oh my goodness, this is like what it means to be objectified. Wow, this sucks. This is awful.
Yeah, and I will say the Aang actor, Gordon Carmier, I think. Sorry, I can't remember how to say his name or what his name is. I think this is also his best work as an actor in this series. A couple moments throughout this episode, I was just really enjoying what he was doing for kind of the first time. I mean, it's not like I've disliked his performance at all throughout, but he never really captured me or I never really saw too much in it. But there's some moments in this episode that I thought he was doing some really good stuff in. So it's a high praise for him for this one. But I guess talking about that Fire Sage's bit a little bit, I did like just the design of the location. I thought it looked really, really well done. And how do you feel about the Roku inclusion, how they represented that character?
Well, for one, nothing about any Sozin's comet being returned. I'll make a big statement here. I'm going to make not to speculate and build hype. This is not hype. This is just me taking an educated guess and saying that no, it's going to be Sokka who predicts that the comet's coming back. Even though I guess maybe not that when they go to the library, if they go to the library, they're going to use the sundial, not sundial, sorry. They're going to use the calendar and the big planetarium to, showcase the cosmos and every other, bit of history throughout the world. And they're going to realize, oh, this is when the comet's coming. And they're not going to say how this is going to happen. Cause how could Roku know about this? Even though Kyoshi's showing Aang like, oh, here's the, I guess, the event at the very end of the season for you or whatever this is. So I wonder if the Firebenders already know and nobody else realizes. And so it's Sokka who's going to figure out, oh, that it's not only the day of the Black Sun still happens, but there's also a comet approaching. I don't know.
I wouldn't mind that. It'd be a nice thing to give to Sokka. I think that'd be good.
Certainly.
But yes, we meet this nice Fire Sage. I wish we got a little bit more time with him. The stuff that we did get, I enjoyed, and I wish that I could have gotten a little bit more to know with this character. But I guess moving on to Roku himself, I was a little bit taken off guard with him. I think I liked it a little bit more in the second viewing, but it is definitely its own take. And this is a much more Iroh feeling kind of Roku. How about you? What were you thinking?
No, I agree with you on that. I like the line about friends, if they're going to do what I think they're going to do in season 3, potentially, where he's like, you can't, not trust your friends. Sorry, I don't remember the line itself, but when he, I should have wrote this down, but when he mentions, you know, don't always, it is only the avatars world. You cannot trust your friends or whatever it was he says. I think I know what he's hinting at.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm seeing what you're saying too. Yeah. I'm feeling what you're putting down.
And I also, I don't know if the past avatars, I like that they're doing it this way, at least with Kyoshi and Roku, where Aang is interacting with them at the certain like ley lines or points of intersecting, like spiritual planes, like where there's highest energy or whatever you want to call it, where there's shrines dedicated to them, where in place of, you know, which I guess they saved themselves doing this, because remember in Southern Air Temple, they had that entire chamber, mausoleum, whatever you want to call it, filled with all the like past avatar statues. So it's like, I guess all Aang has to do is just make a quick trip, if it's, you know, if it's that fast, all the way to the South Pole and just start interacting with all of them. It's like that scene from Mulan where all the ancestors just start like coming out of the walls. But like, yeah, no, they avoided doing that, I guess, for that reason. But yeah, here he, you know, talks with Roku, and you're right. He is a little bit more jovial than he was in the first series, the original series. And I do like how he also kind of like, not blows hot air, but definitely mentions the hot air that Kyoshi is spewing out.
Yeah, he does like the robotic stance. Like, she's a little bit stiff, you know. Yeah, I thought that was fun.
You mean like a rock?
Hey, maybe we'll see the boulder later on.
And I'm not going to just keep quoting any, like, because Roku has a lot of good lines. I'm not denying that. I'm just like, hey, you know, if I kept saying that, he's going to, you know, just going to be reading the whole script.
Yeah, but it did take me a little bit to get what they were doing with this different Roku. But I think it worked. And I like that it's almost a little way, little connection back to Gyatso. Like, he kind of has a similar energy to him, and that's good for Aang. Especially in this dark moment with his friends being captured by Ko. So
it will be interesting to see if Gyatso was Roku's air trainer.
That'd be interesting.
But my question, though, is maybe this will also come up. I am wondering what it is and the reason why Roku decided to take the Mother of All Faces totem from Ko.
Yeah, and I thought that itself was a cool inclusion. I liked that. And I wasn't expecting it. So I was like, hey, that's pretty cool they're throwing that in there.
Especially for us, since we only just read that recently.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me curious what other things they're going to be taking, or maybe have already taken and we just didn't know since we haven't read all the comics.
As I said, there's probably, like I said, the fox spirit that we saw last episode could have been from like one of the other books that I just didn't know about.
That's fair.
That's right. Hang on a second.
Sure.
The truth is, for the Avatar, friends can be a liability.
It's funny that line came up almost exactly as you were saying it.
That's because I think we're almost in sync. That's interesting. Now, where else would you like to go, sir?
Oh, yeah. You highlighted June.
I love June. I love her so much. So to have her be a teacher, like an unofficial, not even official, but just her to almost be like a teacher to Aang, like a brutally honest one who's only in it for the money. I love that so much. Like, we have all these, like, you know, masters and men and women of high degrees of spiritual respect or whatever, and we just have a mercenary, basically. I love that. I love that she's basically teaching him the real world. I like, and she is, I'll be, you know, crucified for saying this. She's the better version of Benicio del Toro's character from The Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I love the comfort in this world that she's in. Like, she's like, oh, I heard that you're here to save the world. But, like, for her, the world's just fine as it is. Like, she's got lots of opportunities for work. She can play with both sides. Him saving the world would be a net negative for her. So I think that really works, too.
She's not stopping him. It's just only if, like, she has a contract with him. That's only why, like, you know, they'll cross paths. But I just love that, I guess, in this unconventional journey that Aang has to go through, this, you know, all the other past avatars they also had, like, unconventional ways of training and whatnot. But if we're going by, you know, the big three or whatever, the big four from previous cycles, I just love how he gets advice from like all these different places that he didn't think he'd get from. And June is one of them. And I hope maybe I'm making her role a little bit too like big, but I just love how, again, brutally honest she is. And I feel like Aang needs that. I feel like Aang needs to keep that in his mind and mull over what she's saying and kind of take that to heart and be like, all right, well, how can I prove her wrong is maybe is the term, but like, yeah, how can I like, you know, work with what she's saying.
Yeah, and I like the way that, again, the actor playing Aang played that scene where it really did seem like he was, not like he was considering what she was saying, but just soaking it up, soaking up this very different worldview than he has. So I hope it does have more of an impact later on. I hope they call back to this a little bit.
And I agree, you know, and as suggestive as this may sound, pardon me, I do like the fact that they changed the roles of saying that June now, she's teasing, of course, she's just, you know, playing and flirting, but I like that she's the one that thinks that Uncle Iroh's cute rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I think it plays a lot better this way. I think it adds such a funny charm to it.
It does.
And it's hard to tell if she like thinks he's attractive or just like cute as in like, you know, like look at this guy, he's leading his nephew around, his facial hair.
Yep.
Just I love his kind of like shock of it too. He's like, oh, I'm like, oh, okay.
And he shows like no interest in her romantically. I love that. That's a good change. I'm all for this change.
Yeah.
And she also sets up before she leaves, again, I know I'm just doing a whole scene, but she mentions about this gun, this one has heat on him, which means, oh, that means that, well, it's kind of obvious that others are after him.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that scene so much too that when I was watching this through the second time around, I was like, oh yeah, this scene's gonna be my best thing. But then it went along and I was like, oh no, unfortunately, as good as that scene was, there are better scenes. So, but it really was good. And I hope we see more June. I would love to see her come back in some fashion later on. I think the actress had a lot of charm to her.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, I wish she was coming. I've abandoned that. Forget that. Three seasons? Fair. Seriously? Man, you could like go on with this if you wanted to. Anyway, whatever.
And I could see them doing a lot of different things as it goes along too. I think that they've left themselves a lot of room to branch their own paths as they go. So I'm very curious to see what they'll do with that. And again, especially after this episode, I'm more interested than I, like before I was just kind of like, okay, we're just watching this just to get through it. But now if they can give us more like this, then they could give us some quality stuff going forward.
And to break the ice, don't worry for this guy. I mean, don't worry. Obviously the end scenes, which we'll get to, I also loved, but the June part was just like out of nowhere. I was like, oh my goodness, is this what I was supposed to feel like, Rian Johnson, when you had Benicio del Toro in that in Last Jedi there? It's like, I finally get it, and I liked it.
Yeah, I would have never thought of the comparison, but absolutely,
it was the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh my word, like that is what it is. Like I maybe I finally seen the light with just having to see through this show.
Yeah, and I guess I also liked the kind of the Shirshu vision when Aang walks out of the fire or out of Roku's shrine and finds all the paralyzed sages. And then we just see that vision when Aang's all isolated and red. I thought that was kind of a fun touch too.
Makes me wonder if she's going to have a price on her head now for breaking into. Well, yeah, no, just like going into a holy temple or a hallowed ground potentially and just assaulting these sages. I wonder if that's going to lead to some consequences for her. I'm not sure. But yeah, you know, the Shirshu vision looked a bit CGI, but it was, you know, it looked like it was from the show. It was barely realized.
But I guess moving to some of the bigger elements in the episode. So, yeah, of course, Aang gets captured by Zuko and Iroh, or gets picked up, I should say, by them.
Yes.
And then as he's going along, he's kind of like, oh, like, Zuko, like, why are you doing this? Like, can't you just let me go and save my friends? And then I promise, like, I'll come back and you can arrest me after that. But Zuko's just so cold and he's like, what happened to you to make it this way? And then we get that meeting scene. Well, what'd you think of some of that stuff?
I want to try to avoid talking about this show continuity, because now you're just doing plot point by plot point, and I'm really trying to avoid doing that because, you know, we were pretty, like, non-linear last episode and past few episodes, I think. So it's like, I got to keep the non-linearity there. Did I talk about the fire like fire soldier masks?
Nope, but it was during this scene. Yeah, I was going to mention that.
I thought, okay, fine. I guess we're just going with this. No, I feel like I mentioned it in one of our previous episodes. Or maybe I'm wrong on that.
I think we mentioned that we were waiting to see them, but I thought this was the first time that we did. Maybe we saw them previously. I don't know.
I thought it was in the previous episode, so forgive us if I am repeating myself. But, you know, it looks like a fairly reasonable adaptation or change to what it was in the series, and fairly accurate.
Yeah, it looks okay. Yeah, I think it's all right. I'm glad to see it.
I guess, you know what I like about it? It looks like it's an engine. It looks like it's like the front of a motor or a grill in a way, and the you know where the lights are. So I kind of like that.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, I think it works. And again, I enjoy the smugness of Zhao during that scene. I thought that worked a lot as well when they're taking Aang for themselves. Yeah, how about that? How about that meeting scene?
As you wish. So it is once again a repeat of the storm. What do we have in this episode? I know I mentioned this, like, you know, what they put in the pot, like what's going in the pot to, you know, we're stirring this broth, this soup, whatever you want to call it, for a stew, whatever it is. We got to add the potatoes for a stew, but that's not true. What do we got in here? So we have like the storm, obviously, because we deal with the backstory. We got the winter solstice. We have just with Roku and going to Fire Temple Islands. We got Battle of the Water Tribe. We had that last episode, sort of, but also just with June's presence here. We got the Blue Spirit as well, right? This is the Blue Spirit episode with the Union Archers there and going to prison, but no herbalist lady who Aang needs to go get some frogs so that Katara and Sokka can suck on them to relieve their flus and their colds. Excuse me. Is there any other ones? Any more I'll mention later if I forget. But those are like the four primary ones that they like condensed into this soup. And now here you go, sir. You are served or stew.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. But this one doesn't feel as dense. Like the Omashu episode felt like it was overstuffed and it was difficult to really flesh out anything. I feel like all the details are well fleshed out here.
They overfilled the pot. The pot was brimming to the it went over the edges of the pot. It was leaking everywhere. You should have seen the stove afterwards. Oh man, it was the mess we had to clean up after that. Goodness gracious me.
Well, take us where you will.
Very well. So in this one, I like that, you know, very much so. This time it seemed Zuko was invited. Zuko was, there was no, like, he's being stopped in the front doors, not the front doors, but he's being stopped by the guards in the front to be like, all right, I got to pass. And it's like, if I'm going to be a leader of this nation later on, I need to be in there. And then it's Iroh who helps him out. This time it seems like he goes in there himself, like willingly, or is, I guess, either invited in or is supposed to participate. I don't remember, but I just watched the episode, but either way he goes in there. And I like how this one, he's a lot more wet behind the ears and he makes mistakes. Now, obviously, again, in the original, he made that mistake of disagreeing with Ozai or the general's plan. But I like how he's like belittled and, you know, before he makes like, you know, sure, he makes like, yeah, we can't, you know, do that and whatnot. And they belittle him, obviously, and say, like, you know, do you have a better idea? And which is good, is only until he had an outburst saying this is a stupid plan.
Yeah.
Then he is challenged. So I like that. That was, I guess, that extended the scene from the original, but.
Yeah, I like the way they played it where, yeah, Zuko, he seemed at first like so excited just to be included in the room. And then Ozai like prods at him like, okay, where's your advice? And when he flounders, yeah, that's when Ozai just gives him that look of like, oh, what a failure you are. So yeah, I did like some of that stuff. I thought that Daniel Dae Kim had some good subtlety in his performance. And then once Zuko starts to criticize, yeah, then you see that change. And that scary guy comes out again.
And immediately immediately just jumps to Agni Kai.
Yeah. Yeah, like you wonder if he was just looking for that opportunity to just crush this little bug. Like just trying to create the opportunities to put him in that hot seat.
Probably, like, I don't believe that he was using this whole scenario as a secret test of care. I don't believe so. I think it was just, it was they were just going about their business. And again, I don't know if we'll get into it. If you want to get into his whole guide and or his parenting his son, or at least the way he's parenting his son, and the path he wants him to go down. If this was again like saying like, you know, what's going on here, and I guess that does lead into the Agni Kai duel. So, but yeah, he immediately is like Agni Kai.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is a touch of spoilers for the next two episodes, but it does seem like this version of Ozai is, he plays a lot of games with these kids and different ways of manipulating. So I wouldn't be surprised if he put him in that room knowing that he was going to find a way to humiliate him or prove how unprepared he is. So, but yeah, I guess we could jump over to that Agni Kai duel if you'd like, with the poor surprise for Zuko when he thinks he's there to battle that general that he insulted, and then next thing no, it's the Fire Lord's taken off his cloak and it's like, no, it's going to be me and you. And poor Zuko jumps to his knees and is like begging, like, oh no, please, father. Like, even Iroh jumps in to be like, brother, this is not the way to go about this. This is your son. And I thought all that was really impactful too. It was just sad to see.
Okay. First off, holy smokes. Daniel Day Kim, holy smokes. Yep. This is like, wow. This is like J.K. Simmons preparing and beefing himself up for Commissioner Gordon. Like this, the same approach, which I feel bad for J.K. Simmons with that. I'm just like, oh man, he actually like worked out to get in shape for that. But I swear, I wonder, this is obviously not true. I wonder if like he went to Jung Chang Sung. I'm sorry if I butchered his name, better known in the MMA world or UFC world as hopefully the future Hall of Famer, the Korean Zombie. I hope that in the featherweight division, I hope that he gets, I wonder if he got a training regimen from him, because this guy was lean. Holy smokes.
Yeah. Oh, and not only does he have that physicality to carry that scene, but just his facial expressions, his deliveries. Yeah, he's delivering even better than I would have expected for this role. So I was really loving that stuff.
I will say at least one... Okay, not complaint. I'll say nitpick. Don't worry, because it's not like, you know, worst thing ever. But when they do have the duel, yes, it kind of looks like they're in a green screen under volume.
Yeah,
whatever.
Unfortunately,
that's just the way it is nowadays. But I was a bit sad. I kind of like the way they had the scene in, and not just because they covered his face, but just because in the original scene it was with like a whole crowd of people. Mm. And I was like, oh. Dang, like that, like just all the humiliation that every like official or onlooker in the Fire Nation capital got to see and witness Zuko, you know, go on his knees and beg for mercy. You know, here it's a lot more open space. Let's put it that way. Like there's a crowd of 10 people or less than that. And yeah, so I was a little bit... like, oh, I wish we had more people there, but whatever, that's what it is. And yeah, just the fact that we actually see them fight, and there's a moment where Zuko, I'm not going to say killing blow, but definitely has like the opportunity to like, you know, hit his dad. Sorry, strike at his dad, excuse me, in the duel. And then he hesitates. It's great. Though I'm wondering if he has that scar on his arm now, or his bicep.
That's fair. Oh, but I love the way that they parallel that with the scene with Aang, because I don't know if you want to jump right into that scene, but just the fact that the trigger that sets Zuko off and switches back into his programming is Aang was like, can't you have a little compassion? And we see that right before Ozai burns his eye, that's what he says, like, compassion was a sign of weakness. And Zuko quotes that verbatim when he yells at Aang and lights up his own flame. So I thought that was really well done and shows how much that scarred him mentally and physically that moment.
Props to the actor for, I think, in my view of the scene, selling it like there's hesitation. Probably because of foreknowledge of what the series shows.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong in how he acted, but I took it as, you're right, he does. While he is saying it, I don't think he actually means it. And to...
yeah.
Act like that in two separate ways and two different ways of thinking is definitely like challenging for an actor. I know I couldn't do it. So props to the actor playing Zuko for that, to show that unsureness while he's shouting at somebody his trauma.
Yeah. It was like it was just too much for him to comprehend, mixed up with the trauma of that injury, the word compassion triggering it. Yeah, that's just the programming speaking. Yeah, no, I think this actor throughout this season has impressed me. But this is also probably his best work, this episode.
Indeed. A lot of people, actually.
I even like with Daniel Day-Kim, when he's burning his eye like that, they zoom in on his face. They give us this close-up. And he gives a really complicated expression. It's not like he's hesitating or that he's even really against what he's doing, but he does have this look of like, this is just what I have to do. It's almost like he himself is switching to some sort of like programming. It's like switching into an inner space. I thought that was a really interesting moment too.
The cycle of violence continues. It's almost like he was flashing back to something his dad did to him. I almost saw, and maybe this is just like the visual effects, I don't know, but I almost thought that there were tears in his eyes, as if he was regretting what he was about to do.
Yeah, something like that. There's definitely something there. And even cutting to Azula, I thought that she had a lot going on in her face too. There was like this stunned horror, but then like the creepings of a smile to it too. I thought that was the best moment for her for this season so far too, is some nuance.
A loss of innocence almost for her, where she's like not only like smiling, cackling, but it's like fear of utter God in her. Of yeah. Like, if I don't, you know, I just saw my older brother muck up. I can't do the same thing. I'm afraid of this man.
Yeah.
So motivation for her to really, like, you know, buck up and the Fire Lord, like, yeah, Aang needs to encounter the Fire Lord early on to get a sense of, oh, I really do need to like better myself or else, because if not, he is kind of messed several ways from Sunday. So I just want to like, yeah, gush to say that the changes they made to this were not even changes, but the ideas that they had with the drama and or at least a lot of the speaking portions of the episode were, I think, my favorite parts.
Yeah, I think throughout this, the show hasn't been the best with action. I think the Aang Nakai duel itself was decently done. But yeah, amping up the drama, I think, so far has been working for them. So I'm happy to see that they're leaning into that strength.
I will say, though, with the bit when they the Blue Spirit and Aang escape, though, with the ladders, pretty authentic. And I don't think it looked as very, I don't know if it was, if it was real, that's pretty cool. Probably not.
No, but I agree. I thought that I kind of wondered if they realized that this was probably going to be their best episode of the season. So they put the budget in to try to make the effects look better than everything else around it. Because I do feel like almost every other episode, I have a couple moments where it's like really glaring and I just have to ignore. This one, the only moment that I had to ignore was that volume stuff that you're mentioning during the Aang Nakai duel. And even that wasn't like super glaring. It was just noticeable. So yeah, I agree. The latter thing was cool. And yeah, actually that whole escape I thought was reasonably fun. I enjoyed that. Of course, it wasn't as cool as it was in the animated show, but it wasn't as embarrassing as it was in the M Night.
About to ask, I assume, yeah, you weren't. I still have a lot of fun with that one.
Oh, but I will say, I wrote down this line that I thought was funny just to throw in there in the background. When the Blue Spirit sneaks into the stronghold, we get this guy who is bringing in a wine cart. And we cut away and we see Zuko just sneaking around. And in the background, you hear someone in the crowd saying, "Oh, I'm happy to see your ugly butt," to the guy doing the wine cart. And I was just like, that's just a fun thing to throw there in the background. I don't know why.
I'll say this for this episode. Whoever like was the one that thought up of these ideas, or all these lines, yeah, you have the same amount of... You gave the guards enough character, like the Incredibles goons and or the stormtroopers from 77.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Just enough. Not too many, but just enough.
Yeah, always keeping your attention. Nothing really slows down or gets boring, or people just feel like they're just stock, just like action figures there waiting to be plowed down. Yeah, I feel like they give us just enough. And again, I really do think another strong moment is the moment at the end with G. Because he has a couple moments throughout the episode with Iroh where Iroh's trying to tell him, like, hey, you know, this Prince Zuko, sure, he's got some personality issues, but you really don't understand the struggles that this kid has had to get here and how that relates to you guys, the crew. I mean, he explains how Zuko has sacrificed for this crew itself and tells that whole story about the war meeting and was it the 41st Regiment that his dad was going to sacrifice?
41st Regiment.
Yeah, I thought the reveal of that to G, just his emotional impact of hearing that story, was another moment that was just, yeah, it was really strong. It elicited some emotions from me. I thought that was really well done as well.
And then changes a whole lot of context from the previous episodes of, oh, so whenever he says we need to get, you know, the Avatar.
Yeah.
Because this was these were the losers, literally, that were meant to go out and die.
Yeah, it even adds to Zuko bashing them for being incompetent. I mean, that was essentially why they're going to sacrifice these guys. They're like, they're the most inexperienced, the most expendable for us. So, I mean, yeah, he was never going to have the best crew here, but...
It, once again, I know, broken record for saying this, even if in the episode, I hope somehow, it probably won't be the case, but I hope these guys continue on. I actually hope that in book two, they travel along with Zuko and become like his band of brothers, to become experienced at some point.
That'd be cool. Or if they end up getting like assigned to Azula's crew, like, oh, this crew knows Zuko the best. You can use them to help track him down. That could be another sense of like not knowing where they stand element, where now they're back good with the Fire Nation, but working against Zuko. Now we're rewriting the show, but.
Well, or not, have yet to write the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though it's probably been written already, but yeah, you're right.
But no, I think that there's definitely potential there, and I'd like to see them continue these characters on. I think that's working.
And so the banishment as well was a very good scene.
Oh yeah.
As you had mentioned, where they, again, brand new, didn't see this in the original. And again, I saw some hesitation in the Fire Lord's eyes as he makes this decision. Like, he has to make it, but he also doesn't want to make this decision.
Yeah, I love the way he starts that. He's coming in and Iroh's kind of like, hey, Zuko doesn't need to see you right now. He's still trying to heal. I thought it was really funny when in a very Iroh line, when he's explaining to Zuko about, oh, you know, I just heard that your eye is going to recover just fine, so you can keep basking in my beauty. I was like, that's the perfect way to couch a emotional moment with that humor, like Iroh frequently does.
Aye. Yes.
But then Ozai comes in there and he's, you know, he's like, I'm seeing the weakness in you, but you can tell that he's maybe a little bit more hesitant. And then once Zuko says his line of like, oh, things that are weak, you know, they can become stronger sometimes. That's when it like solidifies and he's immediately betrayed. He's like, oh, I see, I failed you. And then he just does his banishment speech, which I thought was great.
Well, I mean, overall, Zuko just laid out his entire plot arc or his whole character arc in a way. If he is weak, well, hopefully by the end of the series, he's going to be strong.
Yeah. Yeah, again, lots of really clever uses of dialogue, filling out details in a really smart way. And yeah, I guess credit to them for bringing on all those writers, that whole, I think it was five people I said that they had working on this. They are giving us some really good stuff here.
I assume that the creators themselves, sorry, Bryke, maybe were the, I don't know this at all. Maybe they were the original two writers and then they, you know, departed, parted ways. And then the other three, maybe one of them was present with them, then took that and then just like added more to it or rewrote it.
Yeah, the way it goes is there's a story by credit for Brian Knitsko, Michael Dante DiMartino, and Uba Muhammad.
Oh, that's what it is.
And then for teleplay, it's Brian Knitsko, Emily Kim, and Hunter Reese.
Okay, never mind.
So at least they're involved with both parts and... Yeah, no, definitely this one. I wish that they could get them back to help a little bit on the next season.
Oh, they got a movie and television series to create.
Exactly. But where else to go? There's still a number of really good stuff that we haven't gotten to yet.
I'm not going to, you know, say all of it the whole thing, but just, yeah, the bit where there's like barely any music and it's just Aang and Zuko inside a shack.
Hmm.
And just the thought of bringing up brush strokes. Oh my goodness. I know some people might think of it as like a bit hokey, but I was into it. I was like, okay, no, I'm down with this. Just the trying to have a conversation. I wish maybe we'll see it in like another episode, but I wish that Aang gave return Zuko's notebook. I feel like that would be another sign of driving Zuko's allegiances mental in his head. Like it would drive him up the wall of like, where does my allegiance lie? This guy's like being such a saint to me, even if he was, you know, even if he did defend himself against me. It's like, he doesn't mean to be, he's a nice guy and all, but like he's showing weakness that my father wouldn't want to see.
Yeah.
But my father, you know, burnt the side of my face. And again, I will say, yeah, his face got let off easy. Like it should have been worse.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I agree. But what can you do?
Nothing on, nothing, yeah, well, yeah.
No, yeah, I think the calligraphy brush opening line was a perfect thing there. And especially to bond Aang to Zuko to be like, oh, you know, you've helped me so much, or your journals helped me so much. And they can bond over that passion for that. And the shared history with them both being forced to do the calligraphy practice before the practice that they really want to get to. I thought that was well done too.
Agreed. I don't know if this will be the last we see of Ko. Maybe we'll see him at some point later on in the series. I have no idea. It would be nice to see him again, but I suppose in this world, they've already resolved all that has happened. So makes me wonder how the promise is going to go in this one.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I wonder if they'll implement the promise into this. Never mind. Never mind.
I would hope not, but I mean, I guess they have room to go further.
Sorry. Not the promise. I meant the search.
The search, yeah.
The search. I'm sorry. Not the promise. The search.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they, because I know that this season so far has done, I think even better than they expected, Netflix. It's had whatever metric they use to judge returns, this is more than return what they're hoping for. That's why they immediately greenlit those next two seasons. So I guess potentially they have room if they want to start adapting those comics to keep going after. But I guess another moment to highlight as we, I don't know, maybe start approaching the end, I'm not sure, is the scene on the boat when after Aang knocks out Zuko, when Zuko tries to attack him, and he wakes up and Aang's still there, and he tells Zuko that, you know, the worst part of waking up 100 years later from his childhood is missing his friends. And he mentions Kuzan and asks if they could have been, or if they would have been friends back then, if they'd known each other. And I think you could just really see that, the wall falling down on Zuko's face in that moment, right before he blasts him. Like, you can really tell that this is difficult for him emotionally. So I really liked all that.
Just bringing in that Kuzan line gives me hope that we may not get the little adventure he had. That'd be awesome.
Oh, man.
I know the CGI of the dragon would probably not be great, but just to see Kuzan again or expand his rollout. I mean, we didn't get much with Bumi in this, but still, just to see Kuzan again from the Lost Adventures, that'd be awesome. But obviously, this was the scene from, I think, like one of the best scenes in the entire part of the Blue Spirit episode. Mm-hmm. That speech of like, you know, 100 years ago, you know, I had Fire Nation forever. Maybe he did mention Kuzan. I don't remember that. No, he didn't. Not until book three. But yeah, just the whole like, could we have been friends? And then Zuko. I like how it was done in the animated series. Not that this didn't do it right. This one did, I think, do it right. But that one just remained, like Zuko remained motionless. You heard the music just drop, and then Zuko fired at Aang, and Aang predicted it and just like got out of there. It was, oh, sorry. It just makes me nostalgic for something we did 2 years ago.
Yeah. And that's what's cool about this too, is because of course, everything that we've seen in this episode, for the most part, they do introduce some new stuff. If stuff that we've already seen and already, like they had a high bar to cross to live up to the reputation of these strong story arcs. And it's nice to see that the ways that they expanded it out and tried to make it their own while still nailing that line that they had to get right to make these emotions still hit. So I thought, yeah, the really impressive stuff here.
And it ends, I guess, with the other book ends with saving Katara and Sokka and the other villagers from Ko. Although we didn't see any of Heibei again, so that's not a shame. Okay, we didn't see him there. But that's, you know, the winter solstice, and of course, also, I guess, wrapping up the Blue Spirit in the end. So we get them out of the spirit world, I guess, a fair trade. I'm surprised that that's all, like, Ko is, you know, willing to give them all up. Or wait, did he? I've already forgotten the last episode. At least the details of, was it, did Aang barter everybody? Also, I was kind of disappointed. I wish that they went with they didn't go with the face stealer thing. I guess that was the whole remain emotionless, where Roku didn't give him advice about, like, you must remain completely, like, you know, stone face.
Yeah, sadly.
Whatever. It's an adaptation of Strange. But Aang gets everybody out of the spirit world. As I said, Uncle Iroh makes that unnecessary, I'll say that. And by the numbers speech at the end, Fine.
Yeah, and any comments at all about the Blue Spirit mask, or how they represented that character with in this show?
I guess once again, just as I said, I wasn't convinced by the Mandalorian's cape in the very first episode. It's a nice looking mask. I think it's a little oversized.
I agree. It's a slight bit too big for his face, but I think they got the look of it right. Yeah, it's just the proportions are a little bit off.
I can see the frustrations people will have, where it's like, why is the superhero's costume not the exact same as it is in the real world? And I can understand if people, when it comes to, like, translating it into movies, or cosplayers, for pit's sakes, when they go to conventions, I'm assuming they're going to do their best. They're going to do their darndest to, like, you know, bring it off the page or the screen description of the book, whatever. But again, there's practicality versus, like, how fantastical it'll look, how impractical it is. And so, like, while the mask, I want to, like, sound like this buzzword, but I do think, like, Zuko with the Blue Spirit outfit is pretty iconic. With the mask and, like, you know, him being like he's out of, like, no theater. I wouldn't mind if the mask was a little bit more, like, proportionate, like, even smaller in size.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's just a nitpick. Yeah, I'm just at the scene where, like, at the end where Zuko gets back, and I guess he informs the crew. I wonder if he has informed the crew over this matter of, oh, yeah, no, we know about you saving us. It's like, I like that scene. You're right. I do.
Yeah, and they all give him the respect, and Zuko's even kind of confused, like, oh, what's going on here? Because he's used to them all just slacking off. So, no, I like the unity of that, and yeah, I'm curious to see what they do with that into the next episode.
Yeah, I wish we had, like, one where Zuko himself is also giving, like, respect to them as well, not just, like, yelling at them, but working in tandem with them, but may not be the case. No spoilers for the next episode, just like, because there's only two episodes left, so I doubt that.
Well, I guess we'll find out as we, head into the next episode sometime in the future. But for this episode, yeah, I guess we're coming down to the end. And yeah, again, just to reiterate, I think this is a high bar for the season, and I'll be curious to see if they can cross it. Maybe a high bar for this series of live action Avatar. I'll be curious to see if they can match this in the next season or this season. But, yeah, definitely positive.
Well, till next time. Maybe if really what happened in the throne room, and or the war room, excuse me, was a pop quiz, maybe it is really smart to just always be studying, regardless of, you know, the occasion. Till next time. Peace.